I'm Dr. Leif Tappanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History. I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho. This is The Nature of Idaho. Coming from the 1B, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Well, today our guest is Dr. Peter Isaacson, retired professor of geology at the University of Idaho and interim director of the Idaho Geological Survey. Today, we'll be talking about how the survey provides information about the natural resources and hazards across the state of Idaho.
Now, Leif, I'm a little naive when it comes down to geology. And when we say hazards, the only hazard that comes to my mind is falling off a lava bench.
Well, I suppose that could happen here in Idaho. As it turns out, the geology in this state, one of the reasons it's fun to be a geologist in this state is it's a very, very active world out there. And we'll get into some of the nuts and bolts of how Mother Nature's activity can have an impact on people around, for the better or for sometimes there's some negative consequences of its activity. But, with some smart people paying attention to what's going on, there's good information out there to keep us safe. So we'll get into that with Dr. Peter Isaacson later.
Excellent. But first, we have to talk a little bit about nature news. Scientists have unearthed a four-legged whale that lived in southern Peru approximately 43 million years ago. The 13-foot Paragocetus pacificus represents a crucial intermediate step prior to whales becoming fully adapted to marine life. Its feet and hands, they were hooved and most likely webbed to help a little bit on the swimming. They were also relatively slender, which probably made them difficult to use on land. So what type of land use they used was probably limited just to coming out and resting and maybe reproducing and giving birth. They also had elongated snout and robust teeth with large grasping incisors and canines with flesh-shearing molars. So these guys weren't the baleen type of whale. They were predators hunting fish, more like kind of like what we think of our dolphins and orcas nowadays. And the tail vertebrae also shared the same characteristics of our present semi-aquatic marine mammals like otters. Nice. So the tail was used to help them swim. And what's so kind of great about this, looking at the evolutionary background of whales, there's been some gaps. They know at one point they were land, but they didn't really know how they kind of transitioned into being fully marine until around the 1990s when they found these fossils in Pakistan and India. What's great about the Paragocetus is that it's the first fossil that they found in the Pacific region.
That's pretty cool. It might be surprising to folks, but the closest living relative on the terrestrial side of the family tree to whales today are hippopotamus.
Yes.
And pigs.
And pigs,
these,
yeah.
These cloven-hooved, two-toed animals gave rise to the whale branch of evolution way back. This is 40-some million years ago. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, and they still have little old hip bone type.
Yep, the hip bones are still inside the body of the whale.
Yeah.
Perhaps it serves some function, but it's a relic of being a four-legged animal running around on land, and those hips are still there detached from the spine, so they're not actually hooked in.
They're just kind of floating.
That's right. They're floating in the fleshy tissues of the animal.
And I know a sperm whale has a pseudo-ruminant stomach, so they have old remnants of a four-chambered stomach.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yes, it is.
All these new fossils coming out of the ground over time, which is really great and filling in sort of the story of evolution as animals with four legs return to the sea. That's kind of a fun idea. Today's conversation is all about Idaho's natural resources, and we'll talk about hazards and how the Geological Survey ties into providing information about that. And so today's trivia question is going to be along that vein. Today's question is, what's the number one commodity produced in Idaho? You have to think about mining. We're going to throw to a break. We'll be right back.
K KISU works hard to ensure the reliability of our FM signal, but occasionally, seasonal weather or equipment failures cause us to go off the air. Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
We want to welcome our guest today, Dr. Peter Isaacson. He has informed me that he is a retired professor of geology at the University of Idaho, and he's also interim director of the Idaho Geological Survey. So thanks for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
It is my pleasure, and I'm really happy to be able to explain the functions of our agency and how it serves the people of Idaho.
So the Idaho Geological Survey, tell me where you're located, and then tell me a little bit about what you do and where it came from, this survey.
Very good. It originally was entirely at the University of Idaho in Moscow, but since about the 80s, we branched out and developed what was then called a branch office here in Boise, where I am, and also in Pocatello, and where we had really kind of a very bare-bones staff in each. And now we've increased staff here in Boise especially. So we now call it the Boise office and the Moscow office, and each has kind of different functions that I'll be happy to go over.
Sure. So there's geologic survey here in Idaho, and my understanding as a geologist is many states, if not most states, have a state survey for geology. And then there's a national level United States Geological Survey as well. And I guess, could you tell me what is the overarching goal of these geological surveys?
Well, that's a very good question, because originally, as a matter of fact, this is our centennial year, 1919, it all began. I wasn't around then, but we...
you did say you were retired, so I was kind of guessing that maybe you were.
Anyway, moving right along, it was decided at that time that many states developed geological surveys. As a matter of fact, every state has one. And they were doing basic mapping of the geology of their states, and of course, kind of looking at what natural resources were both available for development for the state's economies, but also for conservation, and that entered very early in the picture. And since then, we've branched out into doing many other functions. That is, I should back up, we started with geologic mapping, just moving over the surface of the state and deciding what is there relative to geographic location. And from that point of view, it developed into identifying and kind of appreciating that the state has really diverse geology, something for absolutely everybody who is interested in geology, right straight from sedimentary rocks to sediment itself, to igneous rocks, that famous Idaho batholith that runs the length of our state, all the way down to fossils, the Hagerman site, the Emerald Creek site up in North Idaho. We really have some very special geology here, and as it turns out, the ancient continental margin, where we went off into the deep ocean, was right here in Idaho too in the past, so that we have really quite a variety of geology.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I can imagine in the early days, a lot of that focus was on just identifying what maybe metal resources. I can imagine gold and silver in those early days, trying to identify where those minerals could be recovered. Is that still a big piece of what you do today?
What the survey does, yes. One of our geologists has been working on the Stibnite prospect up in Valley County, and then she's working on in the Owyhees, some of the old mines down there. And so we're were progressing. But remember that even in the 1880s and even 1860, actually, gold was discovered in Idaho at Pierce. And then in the 1880s, we developed the Silver Valley up there. And that's the whole history of why Idaho has its very strange shape, is Idaho legislature at that time really wanted to incorporate those very rich silver and gold, silver and base metals, zinc, lead, oddly enough, and silver, I already mentioned, and the how important those were for, as it turns out, our war efforts. And then, of course, there's some not so great labor history about miners' strikes and Pinkertons and so forth up north. But the North kind of wagged the tail for a while. But now there's quite a bit now going on in central and southern Idaho that we can talk about.
That's fantastic. Yes, our early history really driven by silver. I think most folks are aware of our history of silver mining. You mentioned gold a little bit. What are some of the other metals that are commonly associated with Idaho geology?
Yeah, well, we have molybdenum, which was up in the Chalice area, Custer County, which was originally kind of developed by a petroleum company, of all things, Amoco. But that was when the petroleum companies were trying to diversify their holdings. But in fact, they decided that metal exploration and mining wasn't necessarily advantageous to their portfolios. Anyway, we have the Cypress or Thompson Creek or whatever you want to call it, molybdenum mine up there, and it still produces, but the price has really kind of bounced all over the place, and it's made economics of molybdenum mining kind of not the world's best. Then we have gold, of course, and gold, as you know, moved beyond the $35 price in the Roosevelt era, that opened up quite a bit of exploration in Idaho, but that was not a new thing since the 40s, because we had the very rich Boise Basin, where today you can still see native gold in outcrop, which is just absolutely amazing. And then, of course, the history of Idaho City that sits on what we call placer gold. And then there was an evaluation done in the late 80s where it was seen that Idaho City sits on a lot of gold still. Now, that's not just the only gold going on in the state. We have exploration going on. There's been some effort in southeast Idaho, way down in Oneida County. I mentioned Owyhee County. And then, of course, the Stibnite area in Valley County that's kind of being reopened, and it has some environmental concerns that people are airing, but the company has been chosen a very responsible path to taking care of these problems. And then, of course, we have other options going in the cobalt area. The cobalt itself is entering the picture. And then last, and well, maybe not last, but certainly not least, is phosphate down in southeast part of the state, Caribou County, and a little bit in Bannock and southern Bonneville counties, where phosphate has really been the big product for Idaho for many years, and the phosphate has many uses. And people in other parts of the state, even here in Boise, but certainly up north, phosphate is not well known or understood. But I always emphasize, at least when I taught, that Idaho had three principal resource-based industries. That's how we stayed alive in our state. And we had metal production, of course, agriculture, and then it's losing me here in just forestry. There we go. And there we are. Those are the three ones. Up north, we had the forest and mining. And So the metal production in the state is still a big part. However, there's a lot of concerns about its extraction. There's a terrible history of the Silver Valley, putting lead into the rivers, largely the Coeur d'Alene River system, that became a real problem for years, and that's been remediated. And mining's taken a very responsible approach since.
Well, good. So you were saying that the Idaho Geological Survey is turning 100 this year.
Yes.
How has it changed from 1919 to now? Are you still doing the basic things when the survey started, or have you guys kind of grown and looked in and expanded into other areas?
Absolutely. Very good question, because in 1919 it was well known nationally, but certainly in Idaho, that we just didn't know a lot about the geology of our state, and we knew that geologic systems host economic deposits, and so that pushed things along. However, the National Geological Survey, U.S. Geological Survey, sort of entered the state in a very big way and did a lot of what we call the geologic mapping and hazards approach and so forth, which we'll address later. But with federal cutbacks and redirection of the U.S. Geological Survey, it's become our task to address many of the functions that they used to. And we have diversified, going back to the early days, geologic mapping, of course, was the principal function. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of famous geologists of our that worked with us. There's a guy named Clyde P. Ross, who mapped a lot of central Idaho on horseback, that was just really pioneering work. He didn't do all of it, but he certainly got as much as he could. And then, of course, we had others since then. Another name that comes into focus is Alfred Anderson, who did a lot of work looking on the geology and mineral deposits of Idaho. And so we have some famous names involved. Since then, of course, we've diversified beyond mapping and metal or resource identification function. However, mapping itself has evolved into looking at a lot of remote sensing type approaches to it. But beyond that, and so we have people involved with that into digitizing maps and doing the remote work on assembling them. But we have other functions that I'd like to point out, and that is we have quadrangle, that is the particular geographic region and site-specific mapping, and we've moved into oil and gas. As you know, Idaho is now has oil and gas actual production.
Where does that take place?
Well, it's in what we call the Payette Basin, largely Payette County, and into Washington County, and that's in the very recent Miocene and younger sedimentary beds. And it's kind of an interesting play, and we have an oil and gas geologist now who's working on that, and he's doing quite some interesting work. Another one we call is hydrogeology, where we're going to be doing water resource identification, namely surface and groundwater preservation, quality control, and just inventorying. And our hydrogeologist is currently working on the Big Lost River system basin up Custer County and down to Butte County. And we have her work is going to continue on down to look at the geothermal areas where we have the Raft River energy production from hot water down almost at the Utah line. And so that's all going on. Then, of course, we have our economic geologists and current researchers in gold and cobalt hazards, which we'll come into in a minute. Then we have something called data preservation and archiving. That is going through all the old written records of old Idaho mines, prospects, geology notes from field work and all that, and all that's getting digitized and put on our website, and I'd be happy to give that website address here in a minute for people to take a look at what we do. Now, remember, we are a public agency, so none of our information and work is private or proprietary. It's all available for anyone to access, review, and take a peek at, and we're very anxious for people to see what we do.
That's good, and we'll provide that web address towards the end. The survey provides an incredible amount of information for the people in Idaho, and one area that I want to chat about is hazards. Could you tell us a little bit about the kinds of hazards that we have around the state and sort of what approaches we have towards addressing them?
Perfect. Well, I can kind of start with a personal anecdote. Is when the Bora Peak quake hit in '83, a bunch of us from Moscow came down almost immediately afterwards. We got here about a day and a half afterwards, and it just stunned us to see that monster lake throughout the Lost River Valley, and it was mind-boggling to see the effects of that quake, never mind the scarp that still exists on the Double Springs Pass Road that I hope every citizen of our state and visitors from out of state get to see. It's one of the best what they call at the site earthquake faults available in the nation.
It's
Nevada
impressive.
Used to have it. Oh, it is. Yeah. And I know ISU takes its people up there, and we did, and I think they still do.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, really fascinating. So that's what we call seismic hazards. At the time, it spurred a lot of interest in trying to do some, not hopefully, well, the hope was predictions, but that's still a difficult art, but certainly mapping the faults and then look at probabilities of faults, that is breaks in the earth, that may activate again. Now, interestingly, the Bora Peak quake gave us, it's what we call an intraplate in one of the big geologic tectonic plates that's all over the earth. And it made us all wonder about the future of seismic activity in the Salt Lake area, because it's going to be the same process down there. So we know that there's been a lot of earthquakes in the Lost River Range. That the Bora Peak quake certainly was not unique. But one thing that kind of, well, was a little demoralizing is that it didn't have enough of a disaster resulting from it. Yes, two lives were lost, but it doesn't have the high impact of an Indonesian or other seismic event. However,
so people forget. Is that the point? Right.
Yes, absolutely. Now, but interestingly, there's down Soda Springs way, kind of in your part of the world, Leif, we had those really interesting earthquake swarms that were not necessarily high magnitude, but quite frequent, and that puzzled everybody for a while. So our seismic geologist, that is our hazards geologist, he wears kind of two hats, we'll talk about the second aspect of his work, is going to be trying to set up a seismic network down that way, and that's called accessing what we call geophones, and try to put them in place. For years, the Utah filled that function even on the Idaho side, and we'd like to say that we're going to be able to do it ourselves. But on the other hand, it's very important to kind of understand where the risks are. Now, the Bora Peak quake was, yes, a pretty large, and it was kind of the only one since the Hebgen Lake one over by West Yellowstone. And so it got people going. Now, there have been a few rattlers, rattled earth, not rattlesnakes, all through our state, and it leads to, you know, a lot of information trying to be assembled on what our seismic risks are. Now, the other side of the hazard work is, of course, land stability. Any drive in Idaho, I always used to say, is an adventure, because we are driving along roads that are along rivers, and there are very steep slopes and mountains right adjacent to that road. And very often, just ask anybody in the highway department about maintaining our highways, there's always some kind of a landslide or collapse. And the question is, how can we predict those? And one consequence of land stability was right here in Boise, where a housing development kind of collapsed. There was a big downhill slump. And the houses, you know, got all twisted and bent, and these were high-end houses. And that really discouraged a lot of people, and it made land use planning far more important than it used to be. So that's a big factor, especially in an area with growing population. So what he's done, and his latest and really high-impact work, is up in Boundary County, right up by the Canadian border, whereby two transcontinental railroads, in fact, cross-cut the state, and the highway and a couple of rivers, and there was a major landslide up there that actually hit the, fortunately not an actual train, but the railroad tracks and the highway, and one concern, and that I hate to mention it, is there's a lot of Bakken oil that's very volatile, taken by train across North Idaho, and we just hate to have one of these events strike one. So what he does is he takes drones, that's one of our research instruments now, and he maps places of possible slope failure where we have oversteepened slope, and certainly take a look at the geology. Is it loose sand that's making up the hillside, or hopefully bedrock that would be more stable? And that's an ongoing project, and getting some support from the highway people, of course, and our emergency management group, too. So that's a big job, and it'll never reach an end.
Okay, thank you, Peter. And now we want to go right back to our trivia question.
We covered this actually a little bit in our conversation, and our question is, what's the number one commodity produced in Idaho?
Yes, sir. I'm going to have to say, and I don't have actual facts at hand since this is a surprise question, but I'm going to have to say phosphate. It's a big part of Idaho's economic story. One question would be, it was molybdenum one, maybe, and gold's going to kind of step into the picture, but we have a long ways to go to rival our neighbors down south in Nevada for that.
Sure. All right. We want to thank Dr. Peter Isaacson, retired professor of geology at the University of Idaho and interim director of the Idaho Geological Survey, for joining us today. To learn more about his work and the Idaho Geological Survey, please visit www.idahogeology.org. Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at KISU.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock, and please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.